And welcome back to Talk Football with Coach K right here on ESPN Pensacola, 1330 AM, 99.1 FM. Chad Brilliante with you here on this Monday afternoon. And now joining us, a special guest, a former professional football player and television sportscaster. You saw him on Monday Night Football, making us all laugh for years, and also one heck of a player. I was unfortunate enough to watch him, but I know Coach K had a chance to play with him. Paul McGuire joins us, and Paul, thank you for your time. It means a ton.
My pleasure. I'll tell you what, Coach K and I were friends for a long, long time. It was really nice for both of us because neither one of us were worth a damn, and they kept us anyway.
That's true one, friendship right there. That's exactly how my friends would have put it.
If you're not playing all the time, and you, at least when you go out after the game, you guys can have a couple of cocktails together, and that was the best part.
It's a pleasure always, and then again, thanks, Paul, for coming on. The truth is that Paul was a heck of a player. I think he was top punter in the American Football League for many, many years. Great, great stories. And let me just take a minute here and go over a couple of them for our audience. I know most of you are probably familiar with Paul, but you're also probably have been involved in the 30-30 series on ESPN recently of the life of Al Davis, which is very interesting. Well, Paul is a big part of that. Ironically, going back to his high school days, when he was recruited from Youngstown, Ohio, a high school there in Youngstown, to the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina. And who could imagine that? Only Al Davis could pull that off. As I remember, Paul was not the only one. But they went there. They had a heck of a football team at the Citadel. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think Paul led the nation in receiving as a tight end and punter at the Citadel. Was drafted in the first round by the, at the time, Los Angeles Chargers. And Florida moved to San Diego, and Al was with them, ironically, at the time, and with Sid Gilman. Sid hired him as an assistant coach. And then, of course, he later went on to bigger and better things with the Raiders, Oakland Raiders, as the owner, head coach, and then the owner, and so on. But interesting, Paul, in the AFL, played in six AFL championship games, won three of them in 63, 64, and 65. One was San Diego, two with Buffalo. Was a guy that went down on all special teams, led the league in punting, was a heck of a linebacker as well. And worked in to give us a strong linebacking core there in Buffalo. But he also went down on all special teams, which was back then we only had 33 players active on a squad. So you had to do a heck of a lot more than one thing. Paul was the epitome of that type player. And then on the television, and I won't go into all of it because it would take too long. But obviously with NBC and ESPN, I think Chad mentioned Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football. He did some college games and I think even some Canadian games at one time. But it's been a very unique career for a very unique person. And, gosh, we could go back and tell stories. I told Chad before we could tell some things on the air and get away with it. Other things we could not. Anyway, Paul, it's a pleasure to have you on. And I want to start things here by just asking you point blank, give us what you would consider to be the state of the National Football League at this point in time?
First of all, Chad, I don't know who the hell he's talking about. I'm 82 years old now. I forget all those days. I don't have to remember them. But I thank you very much. It's very kind of you. The biggest problem, I got to tell you just a funny story that happened when we were doing stuff in the studio. Coaches that, remember, it was way back years ago when these guys decided they're going to renegotiate their contracts. And I'm on the show with Chris Berman and a couple other guys, and we're sitting there talking about it. And I just remember that when you look back and you see guys that were drafted wherever they were drafted, and all of a sudden they played on a very good team. And I'm not at anybody in particular, but this one just comes to mind. It was a defensive back, and he had like 5 or 6 interceptions. And he was in the second year of his 4-year deal, and he wanted to renegotiate his contract because he was on the best defense in the AFL at the time. And he decided, you know, he's not making enough money in this long-term deal, so he wanted to renegotiate it. And they brought it up, and Chris Berman's looking at me, and he says, Paul, what do you, you know, as an ex-player, what do you think about that? And I said, I think it's a hell of a deal. And they all looked at me like, you know, are you coming out of the wall from somewhere? I don't know. And I said, no, just listen to me. I said, you know, I don't mind a guy renegotiating a contract, but, and Chris Berman looked at me and he said, I knew there was a but coming somewhere. And I said, you know, the only thing I'm thinking is, yeah, you can renegotiate your contract because last year you had 6 interceptions and you were mentioned on the All-Pro team and all these other wonderful things, and they won some games, but you were also on the best defense that was being played. And I just think that if you want to renegotiate your contract and the club is willing to renegotiate your contract, I think that's a very good thing. But there has to be a clause in there that says that by renegotiating my contract, I'm guaranteeing you that I'm going to have the same kind of year I had the year before. And if I didn't, and if I don't, then I have to give the money back. You have no idea, Coach, how many phone calls that ESPN got. They get from players saying, is this guy nuts or what? I said, well, don't you think that's fair? I mean, what you're saying, if you want to tear up your contract and win a new contract, then I'm going to give you the same performance I gave you a year ago. That'll be at least 6 interceptions or maybe better. I always thought that was fair, but it didn't go over too well with the players.
Well,
but the state of the pro football now is that we didn't have a chance to talk about this, but you know, it just the players can decide where they want to go play, and for what amount of money they want to play for. I was just totally shocked when I read the paper the other day that Dak Prescott from the Dallas Cowboys, who got what was the minimum that he could get or the maximum he could get by sitting out last year, just playing last year without a contract. And the poor guy only made $30.4 million. And he's not happy with the renegotiation of the contract. I just don't understand. I don't know how much money you need. I know that, Kay, you were, when you were as a player, and I call you Kay as a player, not as a coach, but I know that you were the highest paid player on the Buffalo Bills team when you played.
Well, yeah, the $15,000 is the highest paid.
I didn't realize you made that much.
Yeah, you know, man.
I'm sorry. I just, you know, the thing about it is I played 11 years in the AFL, and when we merged with the NFL, and my first year I made $8,000 with the Chargers, the Los Angeles Chargers, and my last year with the Buffalo Bills, that's 11 years later, my 11th year, I made $25,000. And I was at a luncheon with Ralph Wilson the quarterback club in Buffalo. And I said, can you believe this guy? Here he is introducing me to get the Ralph Wilson Award. And this guy never paid me what I thought I was worth. I said, hey, you know, after my 11th year, I said, I finally made $25,000 my final year, my 11th year. And Ralph Wilson just stopped me for a second, stood up and said, let me explain something to you folks. Yeah, we paid him $25,000. But we paid him $24,500. He was overpaid. And then that's when you sit down because he outdid you. But I don't know. Yeah. I have no idea where it's going. The numbers that we're seeing today are just astronomical. Coach, I'll tell you, I don't know. You know, you and I were talking earlier. We were just glad to be on a team. In those days, we were proud to play professional football, and it didn't matter where we played as long as we had a job. But now, I guess you can go anywhere you want if you want to, and they're willing to pay that kind of money. More power to them.
Yeah, well, they can't allow that to happen, really. For the sake of the league, the foundation that they're the financial foundation that they're built on, which has made them most successful. A professional sports league ever is going to be totally destroyed if they allow that to happen. Now they're getting awful close, and I just hope that Houston, the owners have enough sense to get Houston to keep Watson, not let him go. There've been a couple of others, but and there are sometimes extenuating circumstances, I'm sure, that would force you to, but. As much as they can, they need to keep these people in place.
Well, you know, Deshaun is just saying, I want out of there. Well, you know, okay. you can get out. And, you know, there's where you trade him. I guess he and his agent or whoever it is, or his attorney, must have some say-so in it. But I'd trade his ass to the worst team in football. And say, okay, now how good really are you?
He may be on that worst team in football, though, already.
they did some things that are questionable. But you were a coach and a player. You had both ends of it, which is kind of neat. And you have the right to have the right perspective. You know, when you're playing with the team and you just decide, we never had that. So I just don't know how to react to someone just saying, you know, I don't want to be here anymore. Well, by God, yeah. If you did it before, you were gone. But apparently they can't do that. I mean, I love the trade that they had with Matt Stafford and Goff. I mean, that thing is just incredible. Where Matt Stafford, he's going to go to L.A., is that correct, to the Rams?
Yeah. Yep.
And then the Rams, I mean, they gave up, two firsts and a second, or two firsts and a third, and they get Stafford.
Yes.
And then Goff goes to Detroit. Well, you know, how good are these guys? You know, I just don't understand it. I'm like you. But I have nothing to do with it. I just want, you know, who decides who's going where? Why do you need a general manager if the players are dictating to the coach and the owner directly what they want to do? Why would you have a general manager? Why would you pay a guy over $1 million to negotiate contracts when he's not negotiating anything?
I don't know why they have a general manager anyway. I don't think that's a wasted position. Again, 32 teams in the football league. And it means 32 different. There are 32 different descriptions of a general manager. It means something different to every team. Let me jump to something here, Paul, that we've been discussing, and we get your opinion on it. This year, in my opinion, I've never seen such quarterback volatility in the league, and I'm talking about teams giving up on quarterbacks that they drafted in the first round a year ago or 2 years ago, and quarterbacks that are moving. We just talked about two teams that exchanged quarterbacks, And then we may have one of the deepest quarterback drafts that that I've seen in a while. I think there are five quarterbacks that are going to go to the league and end up playing and being productive quarterbacks in the league. When do you see this going? Because there's still a lot of there are a lot of things that are going to happen to quarterbacks between now and draft time.
Well, you know, Coach, the one of the things that they have maintained in the National Football League is that there's only so much money you can give a rookie quarterback, and I hope that that's still in play. Is that still correct? So
yes. the
question is, you know, you've got the young man from Clemson. Now, here's a guy, and this is what happens. He's going to go to the worst team. And by God, they are. Jacksonville is about as bad as you're going to get. But he's going to go to that team, and they're going to expect him to play. I go back quite a while, and I'll tell you, when Favre was playing with I'm doing a game in Green Bay, and Favre was the quarterback, and he's having a hell of a year. And the guy behind him is Aaron Rodgers. And I'm sitting, you know, it was the day before the game, and I'm in the locker room with these guys, and we're talking, and Favre went to do something, and I was talking to Aaron Rodgers. I said, you know, what's it feel like coming out of Cal? And here you are, you're a backup quarterback. You had a hell of a nice college career. He said, Paul, I'm learning every day. And he said, it's just a matter of time when I'm going to get – and this was his statement. This is before he even became the starting quarterback for Green Bay. I'm going to get my chance, and I'm going to use everything that this man has taught me and the coach has taught me to be a better player. And he just waited his time, didn't bitch about anything, waited his time, and look who's the best quarterback right now in the National Football League. It's him.
Yeah.
You know, and it just the question is now, you got five quarterbacks that you were talking about are going to be drafted, and they're going to be taken by mostly crappy teams because they can. But you can't play them right away. I mean, there's a vast difference between this. You and I know. We were there at the time when you're sitting there waiting your turn to play. This ain't college football, boys. This is pro football, where the guys you look at across from you, most of them are better than you are. Some of them are as good as you are, but most of them are better. And to throw a guy in from college and throw him into the pro ranks right away, you're either going to destroy him or get him knocked out, or, you know, somebody is going to have some blocking that's going to help him. I look at the Buffalo Bills, and Josh Allen, this kid is a hell of a quarterback. He really is, and you look where they took him. But someone asked me before the game, and I looked at it, and he said, what do you think about the Buffalo Bills' chances? I said, let me tell you something. Three things. One, if you can't run the ball. Two, if you can't stop the run. Three, you're going to lose. And it's exactly what happened to them against Kansas City. They couldn't run. They couldn't stop the run. And I don't give a damn how good the quarterback is. I look at a kid like Josh Allen with that team, and as many games as Buffalo won, defensively they did a hell of a job in the secondary. But if you look at that thing, if Josh Allen ever went down for whatever reason, you might as well get on the plane, even if it's halftime, and go on home, because you're not winning. You know, that's the big thing, Kay. You, as a player, we never made that much money in those days, but as a player, you know, a quarterback is vulnerable at all times. I mean, you lose a guy like this, there's no place to go. Except get on the bus and go home.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. And you are extremely vulnerable back there. They have done a lot to protect the quarterback. Maybe some of it is they've gone overboard. You know, it's when I see even having been a quarterback, but when I see some of these guys following through and not having the ability, I don't think, not having the ability to even pull up. And they hit the quarterback and they get a flag. You know, that's, and it's not a bad hit. So you get dumped on your butt every now and then. You know, that's, those hits you take every day. But it's that it's the ones we used to get when you were a target, and you know what I'm talking about because they,
they can certainly
hold you up and make you pay a dear price. But anyway, well, but listen, Paul, I really can't tell you how much I wish we had the entire hour here just to talk about. A lot of things that I think are very pertinent to today's audience out there, listening audience. Now we've got a big mixture here. Obviously, there's interest in pro ball, but a lot of interest in college football. And there's some things going on right now with these, I think, these college quarterbacks that are absolutely amazing to me. There are a couple that I really have a good feel about as far as making it in the league and contributing. And maybe it's a little easier, Paul, for quarterbacks to play earlier than it used to be simply because they do so much passing now. Certain teams do so much passing in the league. And I think that people like the Alabama people and some of the other teams that do a good job with that, and really have a better chance to have quarterbacks ready to play. But ready to play some. I'm not saying they're going to step in as rookies and take them to a championship, but look at what Hubert did out with the Chargers. Last year was an outstanding show, won four or five more ball games. But anyway, I'm not going to hold you up any longer. My friend, I really appreciate you coming on. I'd like for you to come on again sometime, if you don't mind.
Whenever you want. You know, you can't go out without a mask now, and that's a good thing for me because I was never good looking. So I'm made a hell of a lot of friends now that I wear a mask, and I think everybody should wear a mask so you know people don't know really who you are. Hey, my friend, anytime I'd be glad to. And just let me mention one of the Al Davis brought me to the Citadel in 19. He lied to me before he ever lied to anybody else. He lied to me in 1955. But no, I'm only teasing. This guy was a great friend. He was a great friend to every one of the players at Oakland, and just a hell of a guy. He just did things his way, and he created that. That little saying, just win, baby, that's what they did. And he just knew talent, knew how to put it together. And he was just, I only played 1 year for him at the Citadel, and then he went on to Southern Cal from there as an assistant coach. But I stayed at the Citadel. He just, he taught me really how to respect the game and respect people that are playing the game. And that I thank him for very much.
Yeah, I knew you and Al were very close, and I wanted to mention that. I'm glad you said what you did because I knew you were very close for a long time, right on through.
Well, he was just a great, not only a great friend, but a great coach, and I love the man dearly because he really helped me in my life.
Well, I know that, and that's. I'm glad you have a chance to say that. Paul, thanks so much. I'd love to see you sometime, my friend, but certainly we'll stay in touch.
I will. Thank you, my friend. Good luck to you.